It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We should be afeared. Afeared of what? We're not, because we knew it was coming. Told you it was coming. Here it comes, and there it came. The stock market took a dump today. We're down 347 points. It went down 1,000 points. Just last night, I was having dinner with a friend of mine, that an old business partner, that he just, all green shoots. Green shoots, green shoots, green shoots. And I'm like, look, man, if you think the stock market, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't you trust it. Today it took a dump. You know, this always happens with he and I. We'll go out and have dinner, his wife and my wife, you know, like, I don't know, 3-4 times a year. That's it. And every single time, you know, he goes, yeah, but Rush Limbaugh said, Fox News said. I'm going, oh, you have no idea what's going on. Oh, there's so much stuff happening. But today we're gonna take a break from the news today, as bad as it is. You know, I'll just give you some of the headlines. You know, here the oil's starting to wash up on Louisiana shores now. You know, that's and what we find out yesterday, that just a few hours before the explosions on the oil rig, from out of nowhere, all of a sudden Bureau of Land Management came by to inspect. And not just one or two guys, like four or five guys. And the other guys didn't show ID, and they just go, yeah, we'll go take a look around here. Okay, we're done. They leave, boom, it blows up. Are you kidding me? You know, so this is, yeah, too many flip phone, iPhone, camera phones on the mainland. So got to go out to oil derrick. I'm, you know, nothing surprises me anymore. I just never know what's going to happen. Greece is in, an uprising. And it's a lot of people who are going, no, you know, cutting back on government spending. Oh, heck no. We will go into riot. Of course, they're, you know, union and employees of the government and so on saying, no, we're getting ours first. Well, this kind of turmoil that you see going on around the world, a lot of that is coming from the unions. You know, they've been able to get the government to give them goodies now by law. And you have to negotiate with us because we got a law. And that has been going on here in the United States for a long time, but it's going to start amping up much more quickly, certainly with the Obama administration in there and him claiming, oh, yeah, oh, you know, I got my purple jacket from the SEIC, which is a service employees union thing. Well, I got someone that went through it today. It's David Bego. David, I got you there, David.
I'm here, Ernie. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. David, I met David at the Indiana Libertarian State Convention, and David had a story to tell. It was so bad that he had to put it down in print. He wrote a book, The Devil at My Door. And the story that he told, we're going to take the time today to go through this because it's more than just a story of a businessman and labor union practices and how they are going to, you know, make the attempt to take over the planet. It's the tactics that they use and the laws that were put in place to allow this to happen. From a libertarian perspective, you know, an employee does not own the job. It's not his job. It's the employer's job. An employee owns his labor. So you have someone that creates a job, and he needs someone to fill that job with their labor. As an individual, I can negotiate whatever, and if you don't like the deal, then, you know, violation of contract and their employee agreement or whatever, and later, and have a nice day. If you want to bind together with other people and collectively, you know, contract or negotiate with someone, I don't have a problem with that. Libertarians don't have a problem with that. The problem comes in is when you use government force. When you go in and say, as an employer, you have to what? I have to what? It's my business, my job. That's not how it works anymore. Well, we're going to follow this through with David DeBigo so that we have an opportunity to learn what has happened, what's happening, and what's going to happen. And you want to see what the end result of this is, look to Greece, France, Spain, Italy, Germany. You look what's going on there. It has been people that have been placated with all kinds of social programs. A lot of times, you remember France, you know, the whole country goes over. They have like a month vacation a year. And stuff. You know, at some time, this is going to come back and bite us in the rear. David, go ahead and tell us about your business, what it is that you do, where you do it, how long you've been in business, and then we'll go from there.
All right, Ernie, thanks. I appreciate that. We are a commercial cleaning company. We are in the janitorial business. I started the company in May of 1989. And we have expanded across the country since that time. From myself, basically, to today, we have approximately 5,000 employees working in 36 states. And we clean for Fortune 500 companies. We do medical facilities. We do manufacturing facilities, research facilities, Class A office buildings, just about all type of facilities across the country.
Now, let's go ahead. Do you got a speaker on or radio or internet or in the background?
No, but I heard some feedback, so I was wondering.
That may be from the network. We'll slap them around. What we want to do is you have a successful business. Now, where this happened in your home base is what, Indianapolis?
Indianapolis, yeah.
So in Indianapolis, all of a sudden, you're trucking along, doing well, got a business going, people are employed, things happening, and then all of a sudden, you start getting letters from who saying what?
Well, in 2005, we received letters from the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, who has been headed by Andy Stern, who recently said he's going to step down. And I ignored the letters initially.
Okay, now let's go ahead and go back. We got plenty of time. We'll go step by step here. You mentioned the gentleman Stern. Who is he? Where is he now? What's he doing? Why is that name significant?
Well, he is the president of the SEIU. He is resigning. He has not indicated what he's going to do. What's important about Andy Stern is that he is very close to President Obama and the administration. In fact, if you read news reports, he's been in the White House 66-some-odd times in the past year. And
well, go ahead and give me the name of the union. It's Service what?
Service Employees International Union, SEIU.
Okay. SCIU?
SEIU.
EIU. Okay, SEIU. Now, he's head of this organization, and his goal is to what? Unionize who for what?
Well, the SEIU traditionally organizes nurses, hospital workers, janitorial workers, security guards, and recently they've been going after bank tellers and have indicated they may go after home health care workers also, which they already have in Oregon.
Okay, so this is a union that wants to anybody that does anything that's, I wouldn't say unskilled labor, but it's an entry-level job. It's service-oriented. You're not doing machines or anything. You're serving people with your labor in what function? I mean, we talk about healthcare industry also, fast food workers, janitorial. Yep. I mean, what's their criteria? You don't get grease on your fingernails or something? I mean, how do they determine who is or is not qualified to be unionized?
Well, I think what they look at is they look at the biggest opportunity of workers out there that they can organize. And traditionally, most of the union trades have gone after manufacturing. And the SEIU has been fairly diligent and sharp at identifying these groups that haven't been unionized, and particularly the healthcare workers, nurses and orderlies and people like that, because they are also behind the health care bill that was just passed. In fact, Andy Stern came out in a video on his website not too long ago that said that the president congratulating him on getting the health care bill through. And so he's going to get payback on this by more members and more dues.
Okay. So here we have a person that's head of a service union of employees, as many as they can get in for whatever reason they can get. And then all of a sudden we have Obama claiming success based on this union. The head of this union spends a lot of time at the White House, and he's moving on to bigger and better things. And we got the health care bill that's going to allow for a whole bunch more people, something like that.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
correct. Here it comes. Is it going to get better?
Yep,
or is it going to get worse? Well, we're going to find out when we talk to David Bego here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona, on Liberty News Radio Network across the planet. And we have David Bego on from the EMS Group, which is janitorial cleaning service that has 5,000 employees and over 30, what, how many states are you in?
Oh, about 36 states.
Oh, man, the boy's got it going on and is a big target with a big bullseye on his chest. So let's go ahead and give out the main guy's name again. We got the head guy of the union. What's his name? How long was he there? And he's about ready to leave, isn't he?
Andy Stern. He's been there, oh, my goodness, close to 10, 12 years, maybe longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, he is, he's told everybody he's resigning. And the scary part is, where is he going?
Where is he going?
Mm-hmm.
Where is he going?
That's it. Nobody knows. You know, he does sit on the president's board for the deficit reduction, what we can do to reduce the deficit. But he hasn't declared what he's going to do otherwise. There's speculation he'll wind up in some job in the administration, but nobody knows at this point.
Okay, so here we have a – do you know what the size of the organization is? Was and what it is now and what their plans are?
The SEIU is really the largest union in this country right now. There are about 2.2 million members, and they split off from the AFL-CIO because of Andy Stern. He had a difference of opinion with the leaders of the AFL-CIO and split off and took some other organizations with him. And he wrote a book that's called A Country That Works, and if you read his book, he's clearly has a socialistic agenda and believes in big government, believes in government intervention, and he's very politically savvy. He knows that if he spends money on the people that he wants to get elected, he can get them to pass laws that will increase his membership, and it's just a vicious circle. With his ultimate goal of running the politics in our country.
Well, this isn't like a big shock. You know, he's not like the first guy. You know, we got the, you know, Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamsters, and wind up the AFL-CIO, and they're not going fast enough, hard enough for him. So he splits off with whatever, and he goes, you know what? I got entry-level employees that, you know, not as well educated oftentimes, can be easily convinced to, you know, it's in their best interest to whatever and wear the same shirt and go out and shame on and protest. And, you know, I can see that that can be turned into a powerful machine, because not only do you have a voting block, you know, that is oftentimes, you know, it kind of shifts and wanders and so on. But when you got a group of individuals that can actually do something, they get on the buses, they show up somewhere, they put up signs, they can put pressure on. I mean, I know that's what I do. You know, the activists, when you got, you know, I'm these guys on the other side for freedom. And, you know, we target you. Oh, man, bad guys get outed. What? They want to make you a bad guy and out you as someone that needs to be, you know, brought into the fold. Now, how did that start? You started receiving letters. What did they say?
Well, they basically said, they were very cordial at first. They said, you know, we'd like to sit down and talk to you. We want to help your employees, and we think we can do some things to do that, and please contact us. And we had already viewed some of their campaigns in other cities and seen some of their contracts, and we knew what they did. And quite honestly, employees in the cities that we were in, our employees were making more than the union contract wages. So we just didn't have an interest in what they had to sell. And when I kept ignoring the letters, then I started getting emails and phone calls, and finally it got to the point where I just answered their phone calls, and they wanted a meeting, and I finally met with them in April of 2006.
In retrospect, would you have been better off just to keep ignoring them, or were they just came out, you know, was that kind of amped it up, or they were going to do what they were going to do anyway? I mean, what advice do you have to someone else in your same position? Call them, meet with them, ignore them, you know, send over your lawyer with a violin case? What?
Well, they're not going to go away. And you have to make a decision that either you're going to work with them and sign an agreement. They want you to sign a neutrality agreement.
Well, define that. And I keep hearing about that. Neutrality agreement. Okay, I am neutral now. What does that mean?
Well, in their eyes, what neutral means is that you sign this agreement. And in this agreement, it's basically the same as the Employee Free Choice Act. Has the same type of provisions in it, whereby it's card check. People, employees have to give their right up to a secret ballot election. There's provisions in there for quick contract negotiations. There's also provisions in there that the employer will have a gag order, can't talk to the employees, positive, negative about the union's intentions. And probably the most onerous one that I just could not live with was I would have to give them a list of all my employees and their contact information, home addresses. And we knew what that was going to happen with that. They would go to the homes and intimidate and threaten the people until they signed union cards. And because it would be under a card check scenario, all they had to do is get 50% plus one and sign it, and the people would be union.
Okay, now I want to clarify something before we go into break. Here in Arizona, our state constitution, it's a right-to-work state. You know, you can't have closed shops. You can't force it. You just say, hey, man, I don't have to negotiate with the union. It's a right-to-work state and so on. So when I was in the restaurant industry, at restaurants and so on, and people, they'd come and warn us, you know, they're coming, try to get a big deal, all of us to, you know, go to this meeting, pay to be informed about whatever. And I knew one thing. I go, well, the Arizona Constitution prevents them from doing a lot of the stuff that you're threatening. They can't even get started. They're like, okay, never mind. And the reason that they would do this, there was almost an industry created around helping guys like you before they got a foothold and they came to Arizona and didn't bother to read the Constitution. But in other states, they don't have that protection. And I'll bet you Indiana sure as heck doesn't. So,
well, Indiana's not a right-to-work state, but even if you are a right-to-work state, all that does is let you opt out of the union if the workforce votes one in. And what they really bet on, to be quite honest with you, is that even in a right-to-work state, that they get in and they get a majority of the people to vote for the union because the employer signed a neutrality agreement, that once they get in there, the people that don't join, they'll put enough intimidation and pressure on them that they'll eventually sign up. And we see that in Indiana because Indiana teachers don't have to join the union, but most of them do because of the pressure and intimidation.
Okay, so now we have a negotiation, and they go, let me tell you what the negotiation is. Sign here, give us your employee contact information, or what?
Well, I was sitting with these guys at a lunch in downtown Indianapolis. It was the president of the Midwest SEIU Local 1 and a member of their contract management team out of Cleveland. And it was, again, a cordial meeting up to the point they realized I wasn't going to sign the agreement. And when the one guy from Cleveland looked at me, he says, "Mr. Beagle, you're not going to sign this agreement, are you?" I said, "No, I have no intention. I'll never sign the agreement." And he looked at me and he says, "Mr. Beagle, we enjoy conversation, but we embrace confrontation. We're going to be in attacking your buildings and your customers, your employees, and you in the next 30 to 60 days. And that set the stage for the next 18 months.
Well, you know, at least they're consistent. But what can we learn from David? That sooner or later, there's a David to their Goliath. Well, we're going to find out, you know, what happened here. We got plenty of time. We're getting all the nitty-gritty because this is happening all over the country, all over the world. Are we better off? We're going to find out when we get back. I think you'll be surprised what happened.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube. What do I see? A whole lot of people crying. Don't blame me. But point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this. Victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat. Get over it.
Yeah! Get over it here and declare your independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. Each and every day, LNR Radio. You know, we got David DeBigo. He, you know, he wasn't pitching a fit. He just got busy. You know, no, you can sit there and yak and complain all you want, but what did David do? He chronicled everything. He archived everything. He got all the information, had resources to do it, went after the one of the biggest unions in the country and did some good. Well, at least we know what's going on. You read the book, Devil at My Doorstep, and you'll go, dang, Canadian, that is that legal? Well, of course not. So what happens? But that doesn't mean they're not going to do the stuff that they did anyway. So they, you have a meeting. They said, you know what? Yeah, we'd like to, you know, converse with y'all and have some drinks and everything. But you know what? We can get confrontational, and that's what they did. So how long after you had that meeting before they started coming after you?
It was about, they had said 30 to 60 days, but it actually ended up being about 90 days. And they started approaching our people on the street, and then they started sending flyers to people on the street, or handing out flyers to people on the street, sending letters to our customers. They started filing unfair labor practices against our company, OSHA complaints against our company. We had they enlist some groups to help them. One is a group out of Chicago called the Interfaith Workers Justice Group, who hire clergy people in the area to support the SEIU's efforts. And those
hire
people,
them? They pay them?
Well, they would say no, but we know for a fact that at least the guy locally here that was the leader of that group was on the board for the Interfaith Workers Justice Group. And we also know that one of the clergy people that actually got 10 out of 400 of our people to strike. And 2 days after that strike, one of the clergy received $27,000 from the SEIU. So we feel like they were getting money for it anyway. They did sit-ins in our buildings and blocked the entrances. They did rallies on the streets. They picketed our buildings. I mean, every day it was something new. And they call it a corporate campaign. And the whole reason behind the campaign is to get you to sign the neutrality agreement. And
You keep saying, I heard you when you were speaking before, neutrality agreement. I'm going, you know, what we're really saying is we want a list of your employees, and you agree that you're not going to talk to them about it.
And when you sign this, there is no secret ballot election anymore. So all they have to do is go out and get 50% of your people to sign union cards, and you're automatically union, which they will get done. If you read the stories in my book on how they harass some of the people, I mean, it's shameless. It really is.
And okay, well, let's go ahead and go back. I want to get to that, but I just want to make sure every time you say neutrality agreement, what people understand what that means. Mm-hmm. That means sign, boom. You're giving them the addresses and contact information, phone numbers, employee information of your employees, and then they're saying, and you can't campaign or say anything or communicate and say nothing, and then we get to go visit them and sign the card.
Yep,
right?
And they forfeit their secret ballot election.
Okay. And
which
no
is like
ballot.
Us forfeiting our right to a secret ballot for our elected officials.
No, I have complete understanding. They're standing there with their shotguns and say, here, make your mark. Yeah, I get it. Okay. So we have the campaign starts, and they're sitting in the building of your corporate headquarters or the places that you would clean?
They never really came to our corporate headquarters. They went to all of our customers. And what their intent was to get our customers so riled up that they would cancel our contracts. In fact, they even sent letters to our customers saying, will you please do business with a responsible contractor, which is the same as a union contractor.
No, I understand that, but how was there any of your buildings that you lost?
No, we don't feel like during that time period that we lost any of our business because of the union campaign. We were very diligent about going out and sitting down with all of our customers that were targeted, telling them what was going on, why it was going on, and that in our estimation, the public, 95% of them, wasn't paying attention to it. And we did the same thing with our employees also.
Well, did you have any support from media or anyone in the business community that would make them feel better by saying, yeah, you know, hold strong, man. We're all in this together. Go get them.
No. When the SEIU attacks a certain metropolitan area, they usually pick out the largest contractors in the area, and they try to get them all to sign neutrality agreements at the same time so that they can negotiate a master contract. It's just financially cheaper and easier for them. And all the major contractors in Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio, the area where they were organizing, basically signed the neutrality agreement. There was a few other small contractors. They tried to get to sign them that didn't do it. But there was nobody out there that said, hey, you know, we're behind you, fight them. Don't give in to them. And the media wouldn't touch it. In fact, the media, most of the time, their stories were pro-union.
Okay. All right. The Service Employees International Union. That's what Wiki says. Mm-hmm. It's a labor union representing about 2.2 million workers in over 100 occupations in the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico. SEIU is focused on uniting workers in three sectors: healthcare. Over half of the union's members work in the healthcare field, including hospital, home care, and nursing home workers, public services, local and state government employees, and property services, including janitors, security officers, and food service workers. SEIU has over 150 local branches affiliated with, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I mean, right off the bat, it's got, offices in Washington, D.C. It has an enormous number of local and state government employees. And as you said, they're targeted on this healthcare thing. So I would imagine in the healthcare legislation that came through, it was favorable to them, I imagine?
Well, we think so from the standpoint that the intent is to go to government-run insurance, and if that happens, then obviously there's going to be union employees and government-run insurance, and the SEIU stands to benefit from that.
Okay, so they stand to benefit in what way? Now, the unions, they get first cut. I mean, is there like another line on your employee deduction list that you're sending them a check? I mean, how's that work?
Well, they obviously, if they go into healthcare, and most of the healthcare is not contracted out services like we're in. Some of it is. We do some medical facilities, but most of them are in-house employees. And because most of them receive government aid, all medical facilities do, Medicare, Medicaid, and that, and the government, especially under this administration, is pushing that all employees be part of a union. And
I'm wondering how this is my point. SEIU is sitting there going, we need a bunch of members. We need a whole bunch. We need a mess. We need 2.2 more million members. And the reason is because we love them so much. Or is it because there's like money, there's value in each one of these members. And I would imagine there's some kind of union dues or something.
Right.
Is there a check that they write, or does that come from the employer?
Exactly. No, it comes from the employees, and typically it can be anywhere from $20, $30 a month up to $50, $60 a month, depending on where it's at.
Well, I'm not understanding what they were offering your employees. You pay them more than the original contract that they were doing, and they're going to have to pay for the privilege of, you know, having them get them less money or be in this union. And then, of course, you know, we're on strike. You can't work, or we got to go out and picket, or you got all these obligations to the union. I'm wondering, the first question I have is the dues that they pay. Is it illegal? Is it common practice for the employer to just make a deduction in there? It goes, you got the FICA, you got unemployment insurance, you got them, and you got union. Or no, you do not make that deduction. You do not have that bill, that check, and they are obligated as an employee to send that due into the union. Now, which one?
Well, the unions are very smart about this. When you negotiate contracts with the union, and I have done that in the past because I worked in agri industry before I got into the cleaning business, and they always have a couple of clauses that they negotiate first thing, and they're checkoff clauses where the company agrees to do the accounting for them, basically, and that is to deduct the union dues from the employee's wages and send it to the union. That way they don't spend the time and manpower to do it, number one. Number two, they get their money every week or 2 weeks, whenever the payroll is.
Okay, so now it makes more sense. I'm looking at it, I'm going, okay, it's SEIU. The more people we can get, the more businesses that we can get under, the more industries that we can get. I mean, it's free money. It just comes to them because they can. You know, well, you know, is the Obama administration going to make it more difficult? Less difficult? Well, I don't know. You need to hear the rest of the story from David Bego of EMS Group. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
They're just goose-step marching into every aspect of our life. And then when you can't afford to pay them anymore and you're starting, hey, we just can't. Oh, you know what they do? They riot on the streets of Greece and then Spain and Portugal and Italy and Iceland and where, man, here they come. You know, it's just our, and you think it wouldn't happen here. Yeah, did you look at the stock market today? Gold prices? It's a coming. And held it off for a little bit longer and gave us a good beat on the tactics, how they do it, documented the unions and how they're using government force to force people. Well, you know, are they forced? I mean, it's kind of they get this protection. Who's going to prosecute? How they – and I want to get back to David Bego from the EMS Group. It's a janitorial service that has 36 states he's in, 5,000 employees, and he's a big, giant chunk of workers that they want to get their paycheck. You know, because that's how the SEIU operates. You know, you have unions, and they, as many members as they get monthly dues. My son, for about 6 months, worked at a union shop as a sheet metal thing. The summer he got out of high school, and they were on his case to join the union. I mean, it was I know exactly what you're talking about. Every day he'd come. Finally, you know, he just left. He didn't want to do it. You know, he left, and now he works at Honeywell and not as a union, as a machinist. But you know, it was amazing. Every day he would tell me about how he'd have a supervisor or someone go up, hey, you done this yet? You done this yet? You need to go there, do this, do that. And the benefit was what? I didn't see, and he didn't see any benefit other than these guys quit bugging you. So I can understand. Once they get in, oh, they'd make the press, but they weren't obligated. Some states, once a workplace says we're union, then you got to be union. But I think they call that closed shop, right?
Yeah.
So now we're in a situation to where we have the union. They're going to pressure you into doing this by, I don't know, making you look bad to the community, the business community, your buddies at the country club. You got you know, your friends and neighbors, and they're just doing whatever they can. And going after your contracts, your high-rises, your businesses, and trying to put pressure on them. Now, during this campaign, when they were doing that, you said you had met with them and you kept your contracts and you had good relations with people that you were serving. But how many times did they go to these places? Was it every day for months or weeks, the hit and miss? What were they doing?
Well, it went on for about 18 months, and every day was something new. And just to give a few stories real quick, like in one university that we cleaned, I got a call from OSHA one morning that said that we had a file, complaint filed that we were forcing our employees to take human body parts out in bags at night. And it just wasn't true. It was just a normal biology lab, but they used that because that same afternoon on the streets of the city in Cincinnati, they were putting out flyers saying that we were under investigation for making our people do these things. And, you know, they're trying to embarrass you publicly. They're trying to get your customers to feel the pressure and fire you and bring in a union contractor. We had this clergy group down in town Indianapolis. They went into a high rise we clean, and they released balloons, like 100 balloons or so in the atrium, helium balloons that stuck to the top of the ceiling. And then they sat down, blocked all the doors, and the police had to be brought in and remove them. And, you know, at the same, and these things were going on, it seemed like daily. At the same time, at night, we had employees coming in that just wanted to do their job. We had one elderly lady in Indianapolis that she'd come in every night, and they kept wanting her to sign a union card, and she says, no, I'm happy, leave me alone. And then they offered her money. She says, leave me alone. And she even got the police involved, and they still bothered her, and our supervisors had to walk her out to the vehicle at night. But they finally got her. One night they just said to her, look, you're going to be union whether you like it or not. Sign the card. And she did. And the sad thing about this is the whole time all this was going on, I kept telling the union, let's have an election. I'm okay with an election. If you guys win, I'll negotiate a contract. If you lose, leave us alone. And they would not do it. They were insistent that I sign the neutrality agreement. So it's just day after day, stories like this continued. You know, our customer, they tried to get the financing revoked on a building of one of our customers unless they brought in a union contractor.
Well, that's an interesting story. Get a little more detail on that, because they went to a great extent to try and mess with their financing because of this. Tell us about that
more. Well, yeah, this particular customer, they get a lot of their financing from the Middle East, and so the SEIU went to the Islamic Society and complained that we weren't Sharia compliant, and they wanted them to get in front of the investors and make sure that the investors knew this and to revoke any financing for these people. They went so far as to send, supposedly, and it was one of our employees, but we feel it was one they had salted into our ranks, took our employee over to London where they had a finance meeting going on and picketed in front of the finance meeting in London to try and get this customer's financing revoked. I got a call from the Guardian newspaper one day saying, what do you guys know about this? I mean, this is for a cleaning company based in Indianapolis.
Wow. Okay. So there is no stone left unturned for these guys. I get it. But there's more. I mean, I remember in your presentation, tell us the Halloween story. I think that was fascinating.
Yeah, it's really sad. It shows you the depths that they'll go to. October 2007, I went home early to prepare to give out candy to the kids. And as I pulled into the house, the phone rang, and it was one of my neighbors. Her husband is in a business group that owns buildings we clean. And she says, Dave, what's going on? I said, well, I don't know. Well, what do you mean? She says, well, we just had trick-or-treaters here, and we gave them candy, and they handed us flyers that defame you and my husband and your companies, and they're horrible. And I said, well, are you aware of the SEIU? And she says, no. And I said, was Harold there? And she says, no. And so she says, I'll be right down, and I she came down. I was telling her a story, and these two little kids come up my driveway, and they're cute little kids, a girl and a boy, and I give them some candy, and I could see in the girl's hand some flyers rolled up, and she just stood there, and they were both just shaking. It was really terrible. And I looked at her, and I said, "Are you supposed to give me one of those flyers?" She says, "Yes," and she handed it to me, and I unrolled it, and it says, "House of Horrors, where EMS employees are subjected to abuse and discrimination every night on their jobs." And it was terrible. And I looked up across the street, and there's a couple of cars with union organizers in them.
And how old were these kids?
Oh, yeah, I mean, shoot. 8-year-old kids, something like that.
Stop at nothing! Nothing. You know, I. How is it that you were able to defend against this onslaught? I mean, 18 months? I mean, at what point during that 18 months did you start coming out openly in opposition, filing something? I mean, is there some recourse for you to be able to thwart this effort? I mean, what were you doing?
Well, really, our only recourse is to the National Labor Relations Board. And unfortunately, that is not business friendly. They tend to favor unions because the threshold for union activity is very, very low. So it's hard to prove anything. But what we started doing, and on the advice of our counsel and with our HR department, my daughter at that time was our HR director, we kept a very detailed list of everything that occurred, and we had backup information on it. So as they continued to do these things, and we felt that they started significantly violating national labor relations law, we decided in one fell swoop, really, in November of 2007, to file 33 unfair labor practices against the SEIU. This is after they had already filed about 40 against us over the course of the summer. And we really surprised them. They weren't ready for that. Nobody had done that to them before, at least to our knowledge. And National Labor Relations Board actually found in our favor on two big issues. One was illegal picketing past a 30-day period, and the other was secondary boycotting, where they're trying to get customers to fire you in favor of a union contractor.
Wow, they actually have laws. You can't do that.
They do, but it's like I say, the threshold is very low for the unions. It's really hard to pinpoint. But our people and our attorneys did a very, very good job of keeping track of all of it, and it paid off for us.
When we come back, I want to focus more on the book. You know, we got a little bit of time. You need to take a break, get the news to you. And then we'll come back and finish this story, because David saw it fit to write a book and chronicle this for, I guess, other people in his situation. I'm very interested to see what kind of feedback he's gotten from that. There has to be other people that are going, oh, thank goodness, thank you. And was there any other books that he read that were out there, or somebody else had done what he's done? Was there anyone else? You know, so are we trending the other way? Is it gotten bad enough? Do we have enough riots in Europe? I don't know. We'll find out when we come back on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and David Bego from EMS Group, the devil at my doorstep. We'll be right back.